Okay, so my name is Nellie Porter. I am part of OS group in Windows. There's a site of OS group that actually called OS Security. And I am representing the teams that owning a lot of areas in security. Some of them are very deep in the platform level, like cryptography, crypto, or PKI, mostly client PKI. And what we called modern user and device authentication as well. This talk will be covering some of those areas. And again, please interrupt me whenever you like. And if you have any questions, please do not hold to the last moment because you will forget this question. So please raise your hand, ask your question, and I will answer. So, there are three topics that I will be talking to you today and trying to go as deep as needed, but if it's too deep, please let me know and we will stay in the middle grounds. The one of them is strong user identity. The second one is strong device identity. And the last one is biometrics. And all of those areas is under my team supervision, and we are very proud to tell you what we've done in Windows 8.1 and on the phone. Phone will be announced very soon, so you will see a lot of similarities that coming on all type of devices. And it's exactly what we're looking for. So I always start my conversation from something very basic. I know that all of you that at 5 p.m. attending security session, you definitely hate password. You all hate password. And if you don't, then probably you have nothing to do with security. Passwords are really, really weak credential. And the basic reason why. When people ask, we're providing very strong passwords, 25 characters, two uppercase, five lowercase numbers, something that only my mom remember, don't trust them. It doesn't matter. The biggest problem with passwords, first of all, it's symmetrical. If I know the secret, and you know the secret, it's not secret anymore. When server knows your password, and you know the password, and it's the same symmetrical secret, it means if server would be compromised, your password, your identity will be compromised. It's not enough. Passwords is actually a replayable credential. Because it's very software-based credentials, it's not tied to any hardware behind, password can be lifted very easily. There are plenty of exploits exist on the system today that can get your password to some who knows place and replay it from very many virtual machines. It means that password never can be represented to you. And because it's replayable, we have big problem with that. And the third problem that we have with this thing, password is very difficult to remember. We're all humans, we have a limited size of memory, even some of us have a lot, but we can't remember those 25, 30 characters per password. So all what we need to use one password. But when we will use one password, what will happen? When you will use one password, it means some site that has no security or concept of security already, when this site will be compromised, then the stronger site that you will come up and create huge protection and secure perimeter will be easily compromised itself. And the reason why? Because credentials are identical for the same user. More than that, what we've seen very much in our data collection. For example, with our Microsoft account, the rate of compromise increasing, and we can predict when other sites are compromised because we see huge uptake of hackers trying to get through account. So even though sites sometimes don't aware that they've been compromised, we already see the increasing uptake of those attempts. So what, interestingly enough, we have few data points that usually I put on my slides. One of them is very interesting. There is a prediction that a few years, people will be compromised online 4 times more often than they will be assaulted in real life. And those compromises usually much more painful than any assault that we have in real life. So it's becoming a really serious problem that we all as community trying to address. There is also a very interesting Deloitte study that we actually have seen in 2013. They tried to investigate the user-generated passwords, 6 million of them. Out of those 6 million, 10K of those passwords, the most common passwords, used for 98.1 transactions. So users, whatever they know, whatever they learn, they're using passwords. They can't deal with the complexity of this mess. And one additional interesting thing also demonstrates my point that small companies started to see their penetration attacks much higher levels than big companies because it's much easier to go after small companies and supply chain than after big companies. And we see it in numbers. Numbers are increasing. So there is, doesn't matter if you're big enterprise or small, you will be hacked. So be prepared and try to ensure that you will deal with that intelligently. So, yes, please. Guys, if it's possible, volume a little bit. How about now? Now? Okay, thank you so much. Thank you. Okay, so three topics that I will talk to you about. First of all, virtual smart cards. Virtual smart cards is a very interesting thing that we added to Windows 8.1, and we announced it last year, and I explained this functionality in details. Virtual smart card is ability for us to recreate physical smart card using capability of device itself, and I will talk about that a little bit. Windows Phone 8.1 will have the same capability. There is ability to create virtual smart card on the phone and make phone become a smart card. The same functionality, the same management functionality, the same Windows RT APIs that will help you to provision virtual smart card on phone or on Windows 8.1 PC. We'll talk about the wonderful world of biometrics. I think I love this topic a lot, and we will have a lot of conversations about that and maybe even questions about Touch ID, Samsung, again, interesting hacks, spoofs, etc. Would be fun to talk. And device identity. I'm talking about device identity or the way how we can attest device and TPM on this device to be trustworthy. Everything that we do is actually based on trust platform, trusted platform module, TPM. And trusted platform module today presented in very many enterprise level machines. We call them discrete TPMs. And we have firmware TPMs, so FTPMs, available on Surfaces, Windows Phone, and other systems, tablets, etc. So we have TPM, so what we call TPM 2.0, almost on all devices that we care about and work with. TPM is a wonderful thing because it provides for us trustworthy anchor, something that we can rely when we build our security decisions. TPM has ability to provide a few functionalities that are incredibly important for us for all features that we do. First of all, TPM is providing for us measures to ensure the device is solid. The device through the measured boot or trusted boot, we know that there is no root keys installed on the device. We also have capability to use keys generated by TPMs. And TPM itself, you can think about that as the isolated module that can run encrypted encryption signing operation. It's crypto processor, but it's crypto processors that allow us to rely on these crypto processor operations without worrying that OS, even infected OS, can penetrate this operation and can create some trouble on that. So TPM is critically important for our survival. And in addition to that, what we do, we're utilizing TPM anti-hammering capability. What does it mean? When we have user authentication credentials, and user provide their input, their PIN, or biometrics, or anything to unlock container where we store those credentials, if user will use it wrongly, 5 times, 10 times, depending on how many TPM will survive, TPM will lock the system, and only specific challenge response process would enable us to unlock TPM. This particular capability helps us with offline attacks. So TPMs have those three primary things that we enjoy a lot when we're developing our features: isolated crypto, ability to do anti-hammering capability, and generate keys that are not exportable. So what virtual smart cards can provide for us? First of all, my team also own physical smart cards, so we love them a lot as well. But physical smart cards have significant problems. It's very cost problematic value for very many customers. So usually physical smart card with secure chip on that costs approximately $20-25. Manageability of these things, approximately $5-10. And you need also smart card reader, because today none of tablets, none of surfaces have the reader, so you need additional reader. So the cost of the whole entire package per user can run to $50. It's quite expensive. So if we can provide the same level of assurances, but using capability of device itself, we see huge value for those customers that want to go from passwords to two-step verification that will help them to ensure that their security and their devices and users that accessing from this security, their services, actually who they are. So what is important for us for, yes, please. Very good question. So the beauty of physical smart cards that you can move it from one device to another, and as such, you can authenticate with physical smart card if your physical smart card reader present to multiple devices. This TPM virtual smart card is assigned and exists on this device alone. It means you need to provision your virtual smart card on multiple devices, or you can, or may, use your phone as your physical smart card to authenticate to your services.
When a corporation has tens of thousands of users and a TPM chip has a limited amount of memory, does that present a problem? And you have policies to say any person can log on anywhere as long as they have their smart card on the device. We run across a physical problem.
You're absolutely right. There is no expectation that we will have the whole entire 130K Microsoft employees provision on the same device. I don't think it's a little too not realistic, being very honest. But there is a limit. So TPM doesn't have storage, by the way. So the limit is a hard drive. What TPM provides is isolation and encryption processing, but not storage. So it means that the limit is, again, is how much hard drive space you would have on your device. It's not unlimited, but it's more than TPM capability itself. Okay, any more questions? No? Okay, so what virtual smart card can be used for? And the scenario use cases for virtual smart card is very similar to physical smart card. First of all, we call it secure browsing. And secure browsing, when you have ability to do client authentication for the browser, and you can use your virtual smart card to be able to accomplish that. On the virtual smart card, you can have certificates that will be enumerated for client authentication for secure browsing. The same mechanism will be used for VPN, direct access, any remote access. We strongly believe that virtual smart card is incredibly useful for remote access, because if you're accessing your resources from your BYOD device, you want to ensure that this device is actually providing a lot of protection for user identity and for device identity. So virtual smart card is a way to go from this perspective. So from Windows 8.1, we started to deploy, yes, please, sorry. We have this conversation all the time. I call it religion debate. Yes. It's 1.5 or 2. We're always talking about, so in official definition of two-factor authentication, there is no concept of separation between what user know or where it's typing and where the keys are located. So you can again argue to the death that it's actually two-factor authentication, but I will not spend time. It's actually not, because it's also PIN that user provide. So any virtual smart card has user-provided input. So something that you have, your device with your keys. Yes, but it doesn't. The official definition of NIST that we're all referring to when we're talking about two-factor authentication, something that you know and something that you have. Nobody actually specified that those two factors need to be on separate device. Okay? But for, again, for sake of something that user, the most important thing, that user providing their input. It's not without user, we would not be able to get access to the keys stored by TPMs. And the second very important point that I think quite a few people missed, this input is local. Those pins that we provide to unlock the TPM is actually only and only available to this device. We do not store them on disk. We actually keep it in memory until we need it, and after that, it's disappeared. So PINs are much more secure than passwords in this particular respect. Okay, so what we've seen from a deployment perspective. First of all, MSIT started to deploy virtual smart card very rapidly as soon as we almost shipped the product. So we have every single employee today, we have virtual smart cards, and we can access remotely or locally using virtual smart card our resources. Also, we have surfaces that every Microsoft actually obtained, and all surfaces also enabled for virtual smart card provisioning. Surfaces, in our case, it's our BYOD devices that we're testing this functionality with, and we have approximately 20,000 users right now enrolled with virtual smart card. We've seen a lot of companies, big, small, middle-sized, started to deploy virtual smart card, and I believe that this technology will help quite a bit to address two-factor authentication requirements. The most interesting thing from virtual smart card deployment is proofing. What I mean by that, when we create these credentials, when you're coming and starting from physical smart cards, somebody needs to issue this physical smart card to your employees. In Microsoft, for example, we have in-person proofing. We have building 92, where we all coming as new employee, we're receiving smart card, somebody taking our picture, and they validate our documents. It can be password, driver license, both, whatever. It's called in-person proof. And this is really why smart cards are actually so secure, because somebody validated the real identity of the user before they issue it. With virtual smart cards, it's derived credentials. It means every single user on their own machine can create virtual smart card if they allowed. So we need to ensure that proofing of virtual smart card provisioning will be as strong as physical smart card. And that's really why, before we allow anybody to enroll in virtual smart card, they need to use the certificate on your physical smart card to sign the request to issue certificate for virtual smart card. And by doing that, we have management tools like ThemeCM, maybe you're aware of those tools, or Interseat or other companies that are building virtual smart card provisioning. They can provide this functionality for all of you as well. So the most important thing with virtual smart card provisioning is to understand the proofing capability that you have in your system to be able to apply to virtual smart card when you will be ready to present. So I want to show you a very quick demo. And this demo is how we will use virtual smart card. So usually virtual smart card is available in our vault, in Microsoft Vault, for any access, VPN access. So what I will need to do when I'm connecting to my VPN home, I need to provide my credentials, my PIN. Good point. Thank you so much. It's actually on the same machine. Let's see. Nope. Two seconds. We'll figure out technical complexity. So can you please figure out what how we can switch to my desktop? It's not slides. The demo doesn't work, so it doesn't show the screen. 2 seconds, guys. These things are. It doesn't show that. No, I'm projecting from
so
here.
You're using your slides here?
Yes.
And so are you extending?
Yes.
Okay. Do you want to do just a
duplicate?
Okay. Yeah,
let's try that.
Close out your slides and you'll just go back into them.
Oh, I think we're good. Thank you so much, Chris. I appreciate it. Thank you so much. Easy. Okay, so let me try it again. In Microsoft, what we do, we're actually trying to access VPN only and only with virtual smart card. So if I need to connect to virtual smart card, and it's how I will do that, I'm using VPN connection and I need to provide my credentials. So all what I need to do, provide my PIN, and PIN can be alpha, numeric, whatever we need. It has some policy complexity that admin can push when we're creating virtual smart card. And from this moment on, I have ability to connect to my VPN or direct access. So using this functionality, we also allow somebody to log into the machine. My demo is difficult for system to swallow. Thank you. So I can sign in with my finger, with my smart card as well. So I have different methods. Virtual smart card can be used for local login functionality or to access my remote resources as well. Okay, let's continue. So the next topic that we will have today and we will cover is strong device identity with attestation. So in Windows 8, my clicker is going out of... Thank you so much, guys. Okay, so I will do the old way. The Windows 8 allows somebody to create certificate in keys on TPM. However, the biggest challenge that we had from our customers is twofold. They ask us a very simple question. So when I am as admin, decided to have certificates that will be stored or sealed by TPM, there is no concept of stored, but created and associated with TPM, what does it mean? And how you can prove to me that it's saying the rogue client is saying, yep, sure, I will create those certificates, and those certificates still will be exportable. Where's the proof that those certificates that needs to be issued and those keys that needs to be created really sitting on TPM? The second question that customers ask us all the time, how to ensure that I trust this particular TPMs? Not all TPMs are equal. I want to have and I want to work only with particular TPM manufacturers. What do I do? And we come up with a solution, and this solution called TPM Key Attestation. So to start with that, there is necessity for us to understand some technical details about that. So every TPM has what we called the highest order bit keys. They called endorsement keys. And endorsement keys, the problem is the display setting is trying to work with me. I see that. Let me start from the beginning. Okay, I think we're back to business. Sorry for that. Okay, where have we been? Can you see? Good. So we're talking about endorsement keys. And endorsement keys are the most important keys that actually infused into TPM during manufacturing time. So we have all endorsement keys or endorsement key certificates to deal with. And the problem with endorsement keys, they're very unique per device, per TPM, and as such, they can be used to locate user whenever they go and correlate their activity whenever they go. We don't want this to happen. So based on TCG logs that we are trying to follow in TCG specs, there is additional set of keys that can be used for attestation. It's called attestation identity keys. So the process of attestation is used to enforce multiple options. One of them is to allow user to self-attest their TPM. And it's called allow user attested EK or endorsement key. We have another option that allow admin to take the list of EKs and have whitelist set of EKs that only and only trusted for their organization. And another option, admins can actually add their own cert for TPM and saying only those TPMs where I have my cert, my certificate, I trust those. To do TPM key attestation, it's actually very simple process. We need to generate a key. We called it RSA key. So there is a challenge response protocol between us and CA that needs to issue certificate for those keys. This certificate's issued for device identity. And when this certificate is issued, it's not regular cert. This cert has specific thing. We called it OID, that specifies that certificate is actually associated with keys that tie to TPM. So what we create a blob on TPM. We sign this blob with our AK key. We added AK pub, public portion of these two sets of keys, and after that we sign it with EK pub. The beauty of those keys, EK and AK, endorsement key and attestation identity keys, they don't send any blobs, they don't send anything. They send only specific structures that are generated by TPM. So we send all this package to CA, and CA validate the signature because they have EK pub portion of the signature, and they're generating the challenge. And this challenge, they encrypt the blob that we send to them to our own private key. And the whole idea is to ensure that client still possess the private key generated by TPM. So when they encrypt it based on EK pub that we send to them, the blob, what will happen? They pass the secret to us and ask, okay, can you decrypt it? And if we still have the keys, private keys, in TPM, we still possess them, then we can decrypt this challenge and send it back to our CA. CA will validate this challenge. It's the same that they sent to us before. And after that, they will issue certificate. So the certificate, as I said, will not be simple certificate. In the property of this certificate, and I will show you example before this use case, it will be very clearly stated that this cert is TPM attested. So device that presented the cert has much more trustworthy than the device that doesn't have this cert. So in my case, I have, as usual, Bob and Alice, and I have certificate authority in between, and Bob and Alice trying to request a certificate. Bob has TPM to help him with attestation, and Alice doesn't have TPM. So what will happen in Radio server or VPN server, you can configure them to allow access only and only with the certificate presented by the device with a specific OID, with a specific signature. So by doing that, when somebody with this certificate trying to get through VPN, you would allow this access. It doesn't require changes on VPN and radio server. This policy is actually supported today. When Alice will provide her cert compared to Bob's that doesn't have the specific signature, the specific OID, VPN will not allow access. So it means that based on this particular functionality, you want to allow access only and only users coming from TPM-attested devices. By doing so, you would ensure that you have control over the devices that access remote resources. Here how two certs will look like. You have the cert that doesn't have TPM attestation information in, and on another side, you will see that this cert is actually have endorsement key validated and certificate verified. So by using that, and this cert itself in the signed body of the cert, it's actually associated with specific OID number, VPN servers can detect it and provide different decisions based on this cert. So to make sure that you would be able to issue those wonderful certs, in our ADCS services, you would need to use the template versus 4. It's version 4 of our template. And the things that we are associated with in version 4 of our template, certificate template, is something called attestation, TPM attestation. And if you will go to the properties, you will see additional tab called key attestation. And you can specify that the cert that you want to issue from your certificate services, ADCS, for example, required attestation. So we will do attestation if client supports it, or we will skip attestation and then special OID will not be added to the cert. Any questions so far? So the goal, again, to ensure that devices with TPMs can have device certificates that can be validated and cryptographically proven to have keys on TPM. Yes, please. EKU, it's extended key usage. It's not part of EKU. EKU is a set of predefined OIDs. We have custom OIDs, the list of them, and there is, again, on MSDN, we published what OIDs we added as TPM attestation. Good question, thank you. Any more questions? It's 2012, yes. Okay, and again, as PKI owner, I always want to add, there are plenty of VNRT APIs that we added with 8.1, and now it's available for phone and for Windows, big Windows. And those APIs allow you to do a lot of things with certificates. If any app is actually trying to do something with certificates, select it, filter it, try to build the chain and validate certificate, all of that is possible through modern APIs. We have a few examples that our own first-party apps are using these APIs. So for example, mail app, when it's trying to authenticate to exchange, it's required client auth. Client auth is built on the certificate. So it's using those selection certificate APIs to pick the right cert and pass it to mail server to do client authentication. VPN app that you've seen, the same thing. They're using client authentication, and when you will see this network connection to be established, they first selecting certificate from the user store and selecting this certificate that they need for their authentication and present it to VPN server. Here, a very small piece of code how to do it. It's actually very simple, even sounds very complex. So we added APIs to our Windows Security Cryptography Certificates namespace, and this particular code allow you to query this special property, in particular friendly name, client or cert, and again, what we called strongly protected cert, so TPM-based cert. So you can actually select out of user MyStore certs that TPM bounded. In addition to that, we introduce a new old SCAP protocol. SCAP protocol is certificate simple enrollment protocol, and the idea behind SCAP, SCAP would require in-depth functionality, but SCAP is actually available for both. It's available for Windows Phone, and it's available for big Windows. So the ability for us to utilize SCAP as enrollment protocol will help with many MDM solutions, Mobile Iron, Airway, Intune, all of those services and MDMs allow you to utilize our capability and SCAP capability to enroll into certificates. And it can be soft certificates or TPM-based certificates. Both of them supported through SCAP. Any questions so far? Yes, please. With what, SCAP? There is not too many plans to go down level. And the problems with down levels are, again, there is very fundamental technologies that we have in box, in both on cryptographic and authentication stack. And to move this down level would require significant work. So I don't think we see huge value to move it because of incompatibility of existing stacks. So work-wise, it's a very big item. And again, usually reliability is a very big problem. Also for us, performance, one of the things that we do care very much in crypto stack, performance of our things needs to be very seriously measured. So we are not sure that Windows 7 would provide for us the same performance characteristics that we expect. So there's multiple reasons, not because we don't want to do work. Good question. Yes, please.
Is it TPM 2.0 specific?
No. So we do support TPM 1.2. The interesting thing about TPM 1.2, the anti-hammering functionality of 1.2 is unpredictable. So TPM 2.0 have those implementation of TPM 2.0 as former implementation of TPM. It's following the same policy. After 32 wrong attempts, it will start delaying for 1 hour, after the 2 hours, etc. It's slowing down the attacker to ensure that we will not absolutely block TPM. For TPM 1.2, there is much more unpredictability in these things. So what we've done, for example, for virtual smart card, we created soft lock to ensure that we will not TPM on some variation of, again, some vendor's machines. It means after 5 times, we lock soft, and after that, we will require it to, again, for user to go through some recovery path to be able to unlock virtual smart card, but we do not lock TPM itself. And the reason why, because as you can imagine, BitLocker and other technology relying on presence and functionality of TPM, if any of us will lock it, then the machine will be unusable. So we're trying to ensure that we will do it respectively and responsibly. Any more questions? So 1.2, yes, supported, and we're trying to ensure that anti-hammering will not anti-hammer your problems.
So my other question is ADCS 2012 support multiple profiles templates? So in a mixed environment, you know, we're migrating from 7 to 8, you know, still supporting.
Absolutely. We have multiple templates on MSAT all the time. Any more questions? We're moving from certificates to biometrics. It's going to be a much lighter topic, much more entertaining, I hope. So any questions on certificates, crypto, PKI vault? No, perfect. Let's go about biometrics. So biometrics and fingerprints is very interesting and very exciting technology for us. Starting from Windows 7, we actually had biometrics in box. The problem with our biometrics implementation is that we provided very generic Windows biometric framework, and every single vendor, every single IHV is it coming with fingerprint sensors, for example, coming with their enrollment experiences, with their usage experiences, acquisition experiences, and all other things that making usage of fingerprint is almost impossible. Because if you're moving from one device to another device, you need to relearn the things again and again. The second problem that we had with biometrics for quite some time, and we continue to have and see those problems, is the swipe sensors. Swipe sensors present on a lot of laptops, but they're not very convenient. And the problem, why is it not very convenient? Because, as you can imagine, this is a small strip that see your finger in very, very small part of that. And after that, it's trying to create the image of your skin and find all interesting points, we call it minutiae point, to construct user template. Swipe sensors need to see your image in some reasonable way. So every single time you will push this pin in different direction, too fast, too slow, a little bit right, a little bit late, it's going to be trouble. So it's why swipe sensors are not very usable very many times. Sometimes when users actually learn how to deal with them, it's becoming much more convenient than typing passwords. But we believe that touch sensors is the future, and I think some of the company already proven that. So what we've done in Windows 8.1, we made sure that biometrics becoming the common system for every single experience that we do. In authentication, when users need to log into Windows, biometrics is possible. We're using biometrics for our functionality. When users actually trying to do something in web authentication, authenticating themselves against browse-hosted sites, biometrics is there to be able to help with authentication. We also ensure that we added WinRT APIs, so modern apps would be able, exactly as Win32 apps, would be able to take advantage of biometric fingerprints. In addition to that, we decided to light up quite a few scenarios that will take advantage of biometrics. And to do that, we ensure that every single thing related to transaction, to payment, will be with biometrics. So today, if you're coming to the app store and trying to buy an app, or coming to the app store and trying to buy a piece of music or podcast, anything that you can buy, if you have biometrics in your system, you can authenticate yourself with fingerprints. So why biometrics is more interesting and more important than any other credentials? There are a few things that are very important about biometrics. First of all, it's very convenient. Users don't need to remember anything. They are who they are. The touch sensor, go. You don't forget your finger. You don't forget your other things. So it's something with you all the time. The second thing is also very interesting. You ensure that these credentials can be shared with your coworker. Because in very many cases, what we've seen is that admins sometimes, unavoidably, or even not understandably, sharing their credentials with somebody else. Your biometrics cannot be shared. And as such, there is a lot of accountability on this authentication method. When accountability becoming critically important for operations that you do, biometrics is the best credentials for these purposes. And the third reason why biometrics are so good, they actually abstract user from complexity of passwords because they don't know what biometrics are associated with. Biometrics can be associated with very, very strong computer-generated passwords that normal user would never would be able to type, but it doesn't matter. It can be associated with some keys. It can be associated with strong credential. It doesn't matter. For user, it's convenient, very intuitive way to do what they usually do. They can touch the sensor, and it will let them go. We tested those ideas on very many users, and again, I think Apple did the same, and people believe, and Samsung done something similar with their devices. So we believe that it's very convenient, and user feel okay to use it. They find it very intuitively, that it's not staying on the way, it's not something that they don't understand why they do it, and what is that that they consent to. So we believe that biometrics is very convenient and very great way for users to authenticate themselves or provide consent to some specific operations. Yes, please.
Just
I was waiting for this question. Thank you so much. So we will talk about that. 2 minutes, I will finish with this overall discussion, and I will talk about liveness and spoof protection, anti-spoofing capability. And three-dimensional is very interesting. I definitely have something to answer that. Okay, so in our system, what we have today, we have very extensible infrastructure that allow multiple vendors, and we're working with quite a few, fingerprint cards and edge stack and validity slash semantic acquired validity recently. So those companies that produce sensor, and they produce the most important piece that coming with the sensor is a matching algorithm. This matching algorithm is actually taking raw data from your finger and extracting important points. As smaller the sensor becoming, as more difficult this problem is for our vendors. And they creating the matching algorithm, and they can add it to our Windows biometric framework as part of engine adapter. So what vendors provide, they provide in UMDF or KMDF driver that we call WBDI, Windows Biometric Driver, Interface Driver. It can be on kernel mode or user mode, doesn't matter. And also they provide part, or they can replace other parts of our Windows Biometric framework. And usually what we see, the matching engine is, again, integrated as part of engine adapter. And sensor adapter is the way how we communicate to the sensor. Sometimes vendors also upgrade that, but not very often. And storage adapter as well. On top of that, we have Windows Biometric Service that providing communication between multiple parts of OS. Everything is on system context, it's local system. And on top of that, we have APIs. Those APIs exposed through Win32 or Windows RT APIs. We also built enrollment experience, and we built what we called CRAD provider or credential provider for users to use biometrics to log into Windows. Okay, so before I will go to demo, let me answer a few questions. So for our biometric providers, fingerprint providers, one of the very important topics that we discuss all the time and requirement for Windows biometric systems is to provide anti-spoofing and liveness detection capability. As we know with security, there is no silver bullet everywhere. And even with Touch ID and on 5S and on Samsung S5, those biometric fingerprint sensors were spoofed very soon after, I think, a day after it was announced. The impression that it was very simple spoofing attack is actually not as correct as some people believe. The Star Bug or CCC lab that was dedicated to spoofs of fingerprint sensors worked on this particular spoof for quite a few years. So it's not somebody that buys some glue material in Home Depot and creates this wonderful spoof would be able to make it happen. You need to have some skills to make sure you would be able to spoof sensor. However, the fact that it's spoofable, there is the concept that we want to ensure needs to be validated, and it's what we call liveness detection. Sensors, biometric fingerprint sensors have different types of technologies that they produce. So capacitive sensors. Capacitive sensor has very interesting things. Your dead finger would not produce the image. And it's good for all of us. We will have all our fingers not cut for those things, not like in some movies, don't worry. And the reason why, because blood needs to provide some very small capacitor to connect to the capacitive sensor. Without that, no image. But it's not enough. What we need to ensure is that also with some protective material on top of the finger, this finger would not create the right image, because very thin layer of this spoofable material can still create the image that we don't want. The goal for us to ensure that any fingerprint that you will leave on your glass, 2D latent fingerprint, cannot be easily lifted and spoof created based on that that would be able to attack the user. If the user is actually trying to help with this attack, I don't think this is a very interesting situation for us. Yes and no. Yes and no. The first, yes, because again, say for fingerprints, we're leaving our fingerprints everywhere. But those fingerprints cannot be easily used or used at all to construct and extract those specific points, because now we are not talking about minutia point. There is very interesting investigation going on every single fingerprint sensor vendor. They're trying to extract, for example, your sweat pore structure to ensure that it's actually a live finger and not, again, some spoof. There are plenty of interesting investments in this area. For example, ultrasound fingerprint sensors that also exist. Going through ultrasound, it's like standard ultrasound, that MRI that you are taking, and taking an image based on ultrasound penetration of your epidermal level of skin. So there is a lot of interesting innovation going in this space. And what I will say, yes, it's true if we will continue to focus on 2D image of your finger, as you mentioned. As soon as you will go beyond your skin, then the interesting thing can happen. I think we can agree and disagree on that. And the reason, again, passwords, you're saying that passwords is more secure than biometrics. Biometrics is not credential. I think it's where we're fundamentally talking about two different things. Biometrics is not the credential. Biometrics is the release mechanism of your credentials. So the same as if you're typing local PIN is not your credential. Is the release mechanism of the credentials that are associated with your biometrics. So when we're talking about entropy, I think when you, again, referring to passwords, you're talking about entropy of passwords, and it's considered to be more secure or less secure. Biometrics can be associated with very high entropy keys. So it's not about what it's associated with. It's about how we will ensure that it's not going to be spoofable, and how we will ensure that user would be conveniently using this capability to do what we need to do. Passwords, there is, again, the most long password that you can come up with is problematic because it's symmetric. As soon as it's symmetric, it doesn't matter how many characters and what is the entropy of your password is. So yes, I agree with you that biometrics doesn't have itself entropies that very many passwords and keys have, but biometrics is not credential. We never position it as a cred itself. It's the difference, I think, in our positions. Yes, please. But good question. Sorry. Yes. So for these particular implementations that we are talking about, yes, you're absolutely right. Biometrics today is password stuffer. And that's why biometrics itself is not a credential. It's releasing the credentials that we encrypt with appropriate system APIs to the application when they need it. You're absolutely right. Okay, any more questions on this topic? Demo. So demo, we need to change our viewing. And I hope we will not have too much trouble of doing that. Okay. So as I said, with biometrics, we can do a lot of things. So for example, I can actually buy an app from my app store, and I will choose the most important app that I need. And as you would see, I would be asked to provide my old password. Imagine typing long password, because it's so secure, on those touch screens. Instead of what I will do, I will touch my sensor and I will go. It will bring me to the begin page that started to beg about my credit card, because I'm doing these demos all the time, so sorry, I do not have credit card. But if I would have credit card, I definitely would be able to purchase this wonderful app. Another thing that I want to ensure that we've done is the ability for me to use biometrics to do in-app purchase. So if any app would like to do anything during the app execution, you can buy whatever additional pack of Finding Nemo, and it's the same thing, will ask me to provide my biometric things. Additional functionality that we can do is from any app. The same thing, if I will buy anything from any app, you will see the same functionality again and again with biometrics. We also enable this functionality for our developers. So we have what we call user consent verifier, and it's capability and in the namespace of a Windows Security Credentials UI. And using those APIs, it's two simple APIs, I will talk about this a little later, but would be able to validate if we have biometrics on the system, and by checking availability, they can ask user for the consent, and we will say, yes, we have biometrics, and we would be able to ask user for the consent. And you can type any user message that you like. And when we request consent, the same UI will be available for user to provide this consent. And I will go through consent, and up will get not only yes, no answer. They will not get password or any other credentials. So here's the app that actually doing that. There's plenty of us running around and trying to ensure that our checkup done, and it's physician coming to you, trying to validate whatever is wrong with you, and after that type the password, and after that nurse, so in different order, all of them typing the same password again and again and again. Would it be much nicer if they would have ability to do it per their own credential instead of sharing this credential between each other? So if, again, my physician would be able to consent and access to the patient records, and if I would be nurse, I would do my authentication with my fingerprint to get to my application and functionality. Yes, please.
From a support standpoint, is it possible for the user to view whatever that password is? The reason I ask is we block the use of biometrics in the enterprise because people would stop remembering their password. So if it needs to be replaced.
Great problem to have. So it's good problem that people forget the passwords. I love that. It's already a great achievement. It means they will not reuse this password again and again on some other things. So it's good. So the fact that they forget the password, there is a necessity to recover password, to do fallback procedure. And for us, we have password as fallback, actually. So if users still remember password, they can recover whatever they do if they, again, have problem with their fingerprint authentication. The another option for you to have additional method for fallback, it can be PIN, it can be multiple authentication mechanisms. For example, for us, for login, we have ability to add multiple, and one of them is virtual smart card, as you've seen, password and bio. So users, if they forget the password, thanks God, they would be able to use bio. If bio is prohibitive, then they can use virtual smart card or something different. So they have ability to get through that, through to login as themselves to the box. So I think multiple mechanisms for authentication would solve your problem. Okay. Any questions on the demo so far? Yes, please. Very good question. And the answer is no. And the reason why we think no to that, because we want to ensure that user template, user biometric data would not be leaked, would not be shared without their very proper permission. And the problem with biometrics, as you're probably all aware of, I would expect that somebody will ask me, compared to password, it's not revocable. With password, you can revoke your credential. You can go and change your password. With pins, you can revoke your credential. You can go and change your pin. With fingerprints, you cannot revoke your credential. And this is really why we have to ensure that your templates, your bio-identifiable information, stay on your device and not shared with anybody. We have some partners that are doing the centralized biometric match, BioKey, etc. They have opportunity to extend storage provider and store it remotely, but it needs to be very clearly communicated to the customers that customers taking very serious precaution to store and understand what does it mean to store biometric data of all the user in centralized place. Okay. Yes, please.
If you can't do it with biometric information, how hard would it be to substitute it? Is the biometric information ever removable from the biometric sensor's memory footprint? Because if it is, then you've got huge exposure that's captured by a malware and reused
So there is two types of biometric sensors exist in the world. One of them is advanced sensors. Advanced sensors, they are more expensive, but they provide match on the chip and storage of templates on the chip. And as such, there is no ability for malware to get access to this data. There is basic sensors that do not provide these capabilities. And then the matching happening on the host. What we do for basic sensors, we provide capability in our storage adapter to encrypt this data to the system level DPA API functionality, the same as we do for passwords, for example, and store it in isolated space to ensure that nobody would be able easily to steal it. However, there is definitely high privileged apps or IT admin that will have access to the password, and they will be able to extract the data from the device as well. We're trying to ensure that biometric data is more heavily protected, utilizing TPM moving forward, but it's something that we're working with our partner to ensure that performance and security guarantee is in place. Good questions, very good questions. Thank you so much. Any more questions? Okay. Okay. So the last topic that I would like to talk to you, Chris, it doesn't switch again, you've done some magic here, is about our APIs, as I mentioned. So WinRT APIs allow somebody to build applications, the use cases for those applications that we can see is, for example, when your app needs to start and required user consent. We see a lot of line of business applications that require user to be present to start this up. So those capabilities can be extended using Windows RT biometrics APIs that will ask user to provide consent. It's okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. What do you do?
It's a weird delay.
It's weird. It doesn't work. And it's still not working. Okay.
This is strange up here, by the way. It's not just her. Go ahead and continue. And
thank you so much. Sorry, guys. Technical difficulties with slight. So with, as I said, the one of the functionalities that we believe will be very useful is offer the consent to any apps. Another interesting thing that we believe WinRT APIs with biometrics will help us with providing user privacy. When user would like to have ability to start the app only and only when they swiping the sensor, that they want to ensure that nobody else would be able to start this application. So those scenarios that will enable some modern apps to become much more user-friendly and meeting users' expectation. So from WinRT API standpoint, we have, as I said, Windows Security Credential UI namespace. You will find those two simple, very simple methods. One of them, check availability. Another one, request verification. And you would be able to do what we need. So I show you, actually, the all usage of that with the apps. So we don't need to switch my wonderful PowerPoint back and forth. Very, very complicated. So to sum up the whole things that we discussed, I think the most important one thing that I want you to believe with us, we want to ensure that passwords would not live long and happy life anymore. We want to ensure that we will come and offer something stronger than passwords for user and devices to prove their identity. And this can be two-factor auth, it can be three-factor auth, one and a half, anything that will be stronger than weak, symmetric passwords. And if we will be able to move all our users away from that, I think all of us and our users will be much better. So thank you so much for your great patience with my trouble with PowerPoint. But do you have any questions? It was very interesting conversation. Thank you so much. I enjoyed it a lot. Any questions so far? Yes, please.
How does Microsoft see this technology integrated into FIDO?
Very good question. In December 2013, we joined FIDO. FIDO is an interesting organization. It's called Fast Identity Online organization that has 50-plus different partners that are trying to kill passwords. So as you can see, we're all very aligned with the rest of industry to get and fix the problem with passwords. A lot of companies that join FIDO are authenticator devices partners, and they're trying to ensure that their devices working properly with OS, like Windows or Google systems, Google Online identity, et cetera. So our goal to ensure that in FIDO, we will be able to provide technical support and technical leadership, because a lot of companies are smaller companies, and it would be difficult for them to drive this very complicated problem forward. There are Google, there are some other very big companies that are trying to establish the same kill password methods and movement forward. So I think we will be successful together. More questions? Yes, please. 2 seconds. So what you're asking is how we want to ensure that communication or data in fly is actually secure when it's coming from one device to another device. Is it the question that you're asking?
Yes.
Absolutely. So there's technologies that we enable today with Azure Active Directory and DRM protection or write protection services that allow somebody to actually encrypt the data, and this data continue to be encrypted in fly. When data is coming to this device, doesn't matter if it's Windows device, Apple device, or Android device, we have ability to decrypt this data on this device and ensure that user can get access to those devices and to this data. Prior to recent releases of write management functionality, we supported only Office files. Now this functionality was extended to all types of files. So if you're interested, please search Azure Write Management solution, and it provides end-to-end encryption of the files between multiple devices. Any other questions? You have questions?
Yeah.
I would be surprised if it's not. but please, if actually you will find, you, is it difficult to find virtual smart card, virtual lab, please send me email and I will ensure that we will publish something. Thank you so much. Any more questions? Thank you so much. It was great. Great question.